Good morning and welcome to the Preventing Grace podcast for this week, sometime in the middle of February. Today we're going to talk about, well, you're going to talk about evolution, and I'm going to share my thoughts and feelings about the Bible, probably.
I thought we were really going to talk about evolution, just our feelings about the Bible in general.
Yeah, I'm gonna just share my what's on my heart.
Yeah,
what do I feel might be true without any real study? You've been reading, so this might be a good day for me to just ask you a lot of questions.
No, I thought that, that people don't want to hear me answer questions. They want to hear you. You're the star of the podcast.
Right, I am. So, I just can't. I haven't read about this. You've been teaching a class.
No, what's interesting, the reason I want to talk about it is because the you really come at the question in one of two ways. You either say, okay, well, science has told us this, and so how can we fit the biblical narrative into it? Or you come to it with, okay, well, the biblical narrative says this, and so we need to accept those aspects of the scientific explanation of origin that fit what the Bible says. So,
what are you, anti-science?
Yeah. So, you know, if you do the second thing, suddenly you're back. You're the Catholic Church excommunicating Galileo or something along those lines. You're anti thought.
Yeah, right? You're a horrible person. Yeah. You should go climb into a hole.
Right.
So, but actually, you managed to talk about it at Good Shepherd without throwing slurs around.
So. Well, it's interesting. At Good Shepherd, we have people who are young Earth creationists, and we have people who are old Earth creationists.
And people who believe in evolution.
And we do have some people who believe in evolution. And I did say, though, during the class, that a belief in Darwinian evolution is, you can't really be Orthodox and have that.
Thanks for alienating my Catholic listener.
But we don't believe that Catholics are Orthodox.
Oh, that's right. Okay,
sorry. Anyway, so.
But they're our dear friends.
They are. We love them very much. But see, they don't think that we're part of the church.
Oh, that's right. Either. Okay, that's another podcast. Let's not talk about that today.
It's okay for us to say we disagree with them on certain things.
I don't want to have conflict, so.
Right.
I don't want to talk about it.
Right.
That's why we're not talking about immigration yet again.
What? What's immigration?
Yeah, let's not talk about it. So, you know, we have people who are stridently young Earth creationists, and then others who think that that's insane.
Yeah.
So how have you come down on the issue? What have you been reading?
I don't see the old young Earth creationists believe in a 6-day creation sequence, and the day is 24 hours. Old Earth creationists would believe that, and most young Earth creationists believe the Earth is, 10,000 to 6,000 years old, depending on how they add up the generations in Genesis.
So here's how I could be a young Earth creationist, because I'm not very good at math. So in my mind, when I think the Earth must be very young, I actually don't have a number for that. I just sort of have a vague impression that God probably created.
It's a youth.
Well, no, it's quite old, but maybe it could be quite young at the same time, kind of like the dual natures of Christ. Jesus can be both God and man, so maybe the Earth can be both old and young at the same time. See, I'm going to just share my feelings today about this.
Sweetheart, that's a contradiction.
I've worked really hard not to have any kind of opinion about this issue.
I mean, but like the two natures of Christ aren't, that's not a contradiction, because he's both man and God in one person, and the nature of God doesn't conflict with the nature of man. But if you say something is square and round at the same time, that is a contradiction. So you can't have an old Earth and a young Earth.
Well, maybe it could look one way.
See, now that's the young Earth position. Young Earth, because people say, well, how on earth could anyone think that the earth is so young because it has...
But when I say young, in my mind, that could mean like a million years because I'm not good at math. That's what I'm saying.
Right, right.
I don't need a number on it because numbers are hard. So, carry on. I threw you off.
Right, so...
Are you astounded by my ignorance? Is that what's going on? You're flabbergasted.
No, I thought we talked about this. I thought we were going to talk about this. And I thought you had opinions about it.
I actually do. I'm just very reticent to share them
okay.
publicly on the internet. But go on. Delineate the. How can a person be a young Earth creationist and still be human?
People talk about the dating of rock layers and scientific sorts of ways we come up with the idea that the Earth is millions of years old, and so they say, well, how is it possible that you could even believe that the Earth is only 10,000 years old? That doesn't make any sense. And then you look at things like the Grand Canyon and formations on the Earth that look like they took thousands, millions of years to form. And the young Earth creationist just says, well, look, when you read the creation account, Adam wasn't created from the dust as a little infant. He was created as a full-grown man. So is Eve from his side. So if you were to put Adam on the examination table and try to determine his age one day after he was created, he would seem like a 30-some-odd-year-old man, or you know, however old he was when he was... whatever age it was that he was created. So the tests that you would do on the earth, they say, would of course going to generate the same kind of thing, because God created it with the appearance of age, because he was creating an environment fit for Adam and Eve to live in.
Yeah, but you're assuming that the creation story is true and that there's a literal Adam and Eve, and so you're a bigot.
Well, see, now there's another thing. Orthodox old earthers and Orthodox young earthers all believe that there was a literal Adam and Eve, and they literally fell,
Well,
if you don't believe that, I think you're not a Christian, or you're outside of the Christian Orthodox faith. Was that a nice way of saying it?
No, that's just as bad. Okay. And we are going to determine your status as a Christian later on social media by commenting on your threads to let you know whether or not you're in or out, because that's on me.
I'm trying to be a kinder Facebook person.
I saw that. Or I posted that.
Yeah.
How's that working out for you?
I think I've been very kind.
Very kind?
Yeah. Ronnie, or someone came onto my thread and said that I put a poster up of Paul being knocked down on the road to Damascus.
Choosing Christ.
And I said, because I was poking fun at Arminians. And she said, I thought you were trying to be kind. But I said in the line before I posted that thing, just a little fun with my Arminian friends. I think
yeah, so
my
the
friends.
Word friend.
If I hadn't put that, I would have been the old Matt.
But the new... The new Matt uses the word friends.
Exactly. To
when
talk
he's
about Armenians.
Skewering. Yes. It's very good. In 2017, you're going to be like a kind, cuddly
old man.
Who believes in, are you a young earth? Where have you fallen on?
Well, I really want to be a young earther.
Really?
Yeah, I do actually. R.C. Sproul.
Are you going to make
For most of his career, he was old Earth. And old Earthers, by the way, they're fine with having extended periods of time between now and the creation of the Earth. And they would say that the days of creation that we get in Genesis 1 don't have to be 24-hour periods, because if you look at the sequence, you'll see, for example, the sun being created on the fourth day, I think, and the way we mark and measure days is by the revolution of the Earth on its axis, in contradistinction to the sun. So, if there's no sun until the fourth day, how would you say it's a 24-hour day? And so that gives them some space to extend the period of time between the creation and us. And they also point out, and some of your young earthers do this too, they also point out that, you know, the generation sequences in Genesis 5 and other places are not necessarily one father having a son and then a son and then a son in direct sequence.
Mm-hmm.
It could be both Cain's genealogy and Seth's genealogy is, both of those are stylized, 10,
mm-hmm.
10 generations each. So they're true, but there could be more people.
Just like the time between David and Jesus.
It's yeah. Like yeah, it's stylized, 14, 14, 14. In Matthew's gospel.
Yeah. Well, that proves the Bible's wrong.
So no, so
just kidding.
So but for between old earthers and young earthers, the question is not what does science say.
The question is what does the Bible say?
Yeah, it's an exegetical question, and I think that's where you need to come down as a Christian. It's you know you if you're an old earther, fine, but be an old earther because you believe that the scriptures, the genre of Genesis 1. Is not narrative history, and so that gives you then reason to be old earther.
So on the exegetical question,
mm-hmm.
The reason that I have a hard time, I wasn't there, so I don't know. I feel very confident saying I have no idea how long it took God to create the earth and how old it is, because wasn't there. But the reason that I tend to be a bigoted Christian who believes the Bible, and I, okay, so the word literal is troubled, and I'm going to not use that word, but so it as you read, say, through the prophetic books, and you come up against prophecy in the Old Testament that points to the crucifixion and the infancy narratives, to the ascension, to the details of Jesus's life, you would expect that literature would be very sort of fantastic. As you're reading it, it sounds apocalyptic, it sounds fantastical, you think... This can't really happen. Then when you really line it up against the crucifixion, you realize that there's real detail. It's mm-hmm. actually quite precise what happened.
Right, so, great, yeah, go ahead, I'm sorry.
So, the sun going dark at noon, you think that's just a metaphor for the darkness of our hearts. But then it actually is recorded that sun goes dark at noon and it freaks everybody out, and the curtain in the temple is torn in two, and
right.
The refiner's fire, Jesus going to the temple is a refiner's fire and
cleansing it.
All those things are sort of less poetical when you look at them historically than you would expect them to be when you're reading the prophetic yeah. books. That gives me real pause as I look at the rest of scripture. So when we're looking at the Armageddon at the very end, I like to think of that as being very, fantastical, and who even knows, it's all
Jesus
poetry.
Jesus isn't going to show up with a sword coming out of his mouth.
Yeah. I mean, I really hope that actually doesn't happen, because that just freaks me out.
Yeah.
But the details of the crucifixion in the apocalyptic literature of the Old Testament give me real pause, and it goes both forward to the end of the world and backward to Genesis. What I think can't possibly happen, often when you look at the biblical narrative, did happen.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm real cautious about saying God would, no, that can't, it can't be six literal days, or
right.
Adam and Eve could not possibly have existed,
right.
And they couldn't, it couldn't have been a piece of fruit, it had to be something else, like maybe, intimacy. What do people say? That it wasn't really fruit,
even well, there's other they things, were commi- right.
Yeah, they did something else, and it's allegorized, it's fruit is
right
standing in for that. I think Other things happened exactly as they said they would be. You know, the plagues in Egypt really did materially devastate the land completely.
Right. And a lot of the Revelation sequence is harkening back to the plagues. Right.
So we just saw a video of hail coming down in Holland. It's the size of like a soccer ball.
Yeah,
hail. It's huge. And so you think, well, the hail couldn't destroy everything. That's absurd. Except you're watching on Facebook.
Actual
soccer ball size hail destroying everything. So it just gives me pause. I'm not willing to say, mm-hmm. oh, that couldn't possibly happen. Or no, that's insane. Or God couldn't create. Well, he wouldn't do that.
Right.
Well, why wouldn't he? Why couldn't he create the earth and have it play out as it is in Genesis?
In 6 days.
I think we're assuming that it's, most people assume that it's poetry. I guess I'm worried about that assumption.
Well, I mean, so, but again, they'll say, well, the difference between the creation sequence and what we have in Revelation is that we can't test and study the future in the way that we can the past. And so they'll say, well, you look at what we're told by the people who believe in Darwinian evolution, and again the age of certain formations and rocks, then that forces, some would say, that forces us then to read Genesis in a different way. So some old earthers take what we know, or what they think we know about science, and make that be the governor for how we read the scriptures. And they'll point to things like, well, look, if you were just reading the Bible, you would think that the whole universe revolves around the earth. But now we know it doesn't, so we have to read the Bible differently. Of course, that's not true. There's nothing in the scriptures that says that. But
revolves around that. No, it doesn't.
Right. But that's the kind of thinking they'll say that we employ if we don't.
So the question is, where are you? What are you skeptical about? Are you skeptical about the scriptures? Which I think we are all, we're skeptical, even if we think that we're not.
Right.
Even if we think we're a Bible-believing Christian, there's a deep skepticism that abides in every human heart about the truth and veracity of the scripture and the details. And even if you think you accept all of it, you certainly don't behave as you do, as if the Bible is completely true. No Christian does that. So are you skeptical about the scriptures, or are you skeptical about the scientific record scientific whatever?
But see, but yeah, everyone gives a pass to science. I mean, science, that's the inerrant.
Yeah, infallible.
Infallible guide to life and the meaning of life.
Yeah.
Evolution tells us we're nothing but random chance accidents, and so.
Which I find extraordinary, because the little that I know about Darwin and Darwinian evolution, it wasn't like a peachy keen, you know, bright, shiny thing that developed without any sort of dark undercurrents of, like eugenics. That wasn't there.
Oh, as you were saying, right.
So those scientists were completely open-minded and pursuant of the truth, and they never let error or assumption or darkness enter into their pursuit.
It's not difficult at all to draw a line from the origin of species to the Nazi
Planned Parenthood
to Nazism.
Yeah,
because the idea, even the there was part of it, if you read the full title of Origin of Species, you see it there, but that there are superior forms of human beings. Superior peoples, because of the evolutionary process. Some of us are more adapted than others. Some of us have superior,
so we should
more
have
evolved
forced sterilization
of the weaker forms, right? And then if you categorize one type of person as subhuman, then you don't want them putting their genes into the gene pool. So the best thing to do is either sterilize them or terminate them, which is what.
So that, you know, that's great for the science community,
mm-hmm.
you know. But they don't have to answer to that. They
right.
don't have the implications of certain scientific theories don't have to
right.
be answered for.
Yeah.
So
and also, with I'm sorry, go ahead.
Christians have generally have to answer for the strangeness of their theology.
Right. But they don't have to do that, right?
I think it should go the other way as well.
The inerrancy of science also is just is something that we kind of let our minds fasten on, but it's also something that if you just study, like you've been doing with the kids.
Oh yeah, I love that.
The study of
the history of medicine.
History of medicine, for example. and you see, you know, the decided conclusions of the mainstream medical community in, you know, 1810 were absolutely absurd. And it took one guy, you see over and over again, being demonized for having an idea that's different, and then he changes the whole.
Yeah.
What was the example?
The favorite one, of course, is that for a long time, and of course I'm bad with numbers, so I have no idea when in human history this happened. It could be a short time. It could be
or both.
Millions of years, or both together. This person was believed that gunpowder was poisonous. So if you were shot on the battlefield, the best method to cure you was to run out to the battlefield and pour hot oil into your gun wound. Surprisingly, a large number of people died in the aftermath of battles. And this poor, I think he might have been a barber, but he was out on the field, and he ran out of hot oil.
He
ran back to his tent, his makeshift tent, and he put together a salve involving cooling, soothing agents. And he ran back out and he rubbed that on various people's wounds in battle. And those people who received the salve
instead of hot oil
lived rather than the people who received the hot oil. It would also seal off a person's amputation. If you cut off somebody's leg in battle, they would take a hot iron and just seal it to keep it, you know, from bleeding to death. But that act often would bring about the demise of the person who's because of the So he then began to sew people up with thread and they would live. But
did the scientific community say, wow, what a great...
Well, that was one of the ones that stood out as people, you know, were so relieved and grateful that did quickly take off. But other ones really didn't. Hand washing, for instance.
Right, because wasn't there a thing for a while that the surgeons loved
to have a very bloody smock because that would...
Shed their...
Yeah, it was like a...
Badge of honor.
Badge of honor for your trade. You wanted a lot of blood on your smock and... You wouldn't wash. You wouldn't put on a new smock. So one person devised a nice solution to disinfect the hands. And when he would leave the room, his younger insubordinates would throw out his solution. Because he was such a... It's so right. awful. We don't want the women to live in childbirth. That's stupid.
Right. That's the point though. Is that if you trust in medical or any kind of science, you're going to find yourself completely upended many times. So if you trusted in the established conclusions of astronomy in 1920 with regard to the origins of the universe, you would have believed what's called a steady state theory, which is that there's always been the universe. It's kind of an eternal thing, never had a beginning. And so, and the idea that it began at some time in the past, time, space, everything we have and everything we know and everything that is, well, that's fairy tale creationism. Then they found the redshift, right? The guy looked through the telescope and he noticed the universe is expanding, which means that it had a point from which...
A starting point.
Right. And so that was the beginning of this discovery of the Big Bang, and the completely upended everything at that point, right?
So, I mean, I think this is a theological question. Of course, by even having this conversation, as I've been joking, we are anti science and we are bigots and we should be taken out and flung into a pit. But the question is for science is that, first of all, you should do science. You should absolutely do science. And you can tell that I'm so good at science that I even know how to use words about science. But
me too, I don't know.
You should have a very low estimation of human ability and human goodness. I mean, science is beset, just like everything else is, right, by the evil of the human person and the blindness of the human person. And it has to be corrected all the time,
right,
because human people are sinful and blind, which we know from the scripture.
Right. So you compare, contrast that with the Bible, where, you know, science being an imperfect process of discovery that is often found to be, or the conclusions of which are often found to be not
perfect.
Perfect. Whereas with the scriptures, there's not an error, not a single error ever. So when you have the two side by side, are you going to trust what has never been shown to be contradictory and wrong in its predictions, or incorrect in its assessment, which is the Bible, or science, which often is found to be,
which is why you have to establish and believe in the inerrant. I mean, because many people, most people don't believe that the Bible is inerrant, and they think that
at just those points where it conflicts with science. So that, and often, not just those points, but often at just those points where it conflicts with science. So they're taking the imperfect art of human discovery, weighing it against the scriptures, and coming to the de facto conclusion, or not de facto, what they think to be a necessary conclusion. Well, obviously, the scriptures are flawed because science, which is often flawed, contradicts what the scriptures say. So it's a kind of a circular reasoning that they are employing, rather than taking the two and saying, okay, which one has proved more reliable over the course of human history, and then trusting the reliable source, they come into the game assuming that science is the most reliable,
right,
of the two.
That's really discouraging.
Yeah. One thing we were talking about on, well, last Sunday, not this Sunday, but last Sunday, was intelligent design theory, which is also very interesting. That's what I've been reading all week. And if you ever get a chance to buy the book, Darwin's Doubt, buy it. There's some other really good stuff out there. Darwin's Black Box by Michael Behe, and then The Signature Cell by Stephen Meyer. All of those are really interesting. And the basic idea is that when you look in your, if you took science as a kid, you look in the average science textbook, you see the moth, mm-hmm, that was white, mm-hmm, is a London moth, who's white. And after the Industrial Revolution, the same species of moth is now black. And they say, well, look, this moth adapted to its environment through the mechanism of natural selection. The moths that had the
darker moths
survived and lighter ones didn't, right? And so the evolutionary Darwinism extrapolates that to say these little mutations and changes that occur to adapt a certain species to a certain environment can be taken over a long period of time to move from new species to create new species, all that kind of stuff. The intelligent design theorist says that's an incorrect inference because natural selection doesn't provide the necessary explanation for new information that would be necessary to move from one species to another, or to a new phylo, or whatever. You have to have so much a different kind of information that is available in one species. Where does that information come from? So anyway, I'm not a scientist, but that was an interesting theory. And so they're saying that the only way that the best explanation for design, or the best explanation for the DNA being the way it is a designer. DNA is like a computer code, and we know that things that are ordered in that way in our world tend to demand that there's a designer, and so
that's where they get the
right intelligent design,
as opposed to
random blind chance over the course of eons bringing us to this point, from the amoeba in the swamp to the to you and me.
It is really interesting. I think you're really brave to bring it up in a room full of
people who know
people
science.
some of them know science, yeah, some of them don't, and the question of what happened to the dinosaurs comes up every single time.
Yeah.
And I would rather just go hide in Darwin's black box and pretend that the whole thing doesn't.
Right. Right. I guess what was interesting to me, though, is it brings up the question of where do you place your trust?
Yeah.
And I think Christians ultimately have to place their trust in the scriptures and see, and then just wait and rest. I mean, because as we've seen over the years, over the centuries, where science seems to conflict with the scriptures, over time it's shown not to be.
The biblical witnesses upheld by science.
Yeah, exactly.
Which is exciting when that actually happens.
Yeah. So, great.
Were we going to check? Will we solve that? So
yeah.
That's great.
That's your
principles for doing science. I do want to just affirm to the wide world that I am not teaching science to our children. I am a homeschooler, but I am not the person who's doing math and science with them. I just want to clarify that for the world.
We do have video.
No, we have they're real teachers who they engage with.
Right.
They're doing
via.
Yeah, they're online.
Computer, right.
And they're doing science experiments right now. They're doing astronomy.
Excuse all the panting and the breathing heavy. It's the dog.
The dog just came in.
Right.
To be with us here. Which I think is, speaking of science, the different kinds of breeds of dogs, the humanity would breed dogs that can't breathe well on purpose or can't walk. I mean, that just shows the elevated human spirit and mind over the world.
Yeah, this is the dog that's sitting here is just a specimen of human ingenuity and
design.
Right.
Like, if humans were the intelligent design behind the universe, then I think it would work really well. It would be great.
Yeah.
The things that we do are amazing. I shaved our dog, but I left his head into one big poof. So he's very skinny, and then he has this huge head.
You should put a picture of him up with the podcast.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
We had another thing we were going to talk about, the article of
Speaking of human achievement and exaltation, there's a great article on the Federalist by Hans Veen about how young millennials.
He's a Lutheran satire guy.
The Patrick Trinity, heresy video. Mm-hmm. Human beings, young people. Young humans, millennials in America are starting to go the way of Japan and other Asian countries and not
get married.
Well, not get married, but not, as they say in Christian circles, be intimate with one another, even when they're not married, which should make Christians rejoice, except that the reason that they're doing it is not because there's a huge influx of young people coming to faith in Jesus Christ and adopting a Christian moral code. It's because they the combination of, I'm gonna say, prawn and social media. No, but I don't want to get picked up on weird. I'm not gonna write it in the thing.
You can say it.
And social media means that young people are deciding it's not worth the trouble to engage right. with other humans, either in conversation or in other
right.
more was, shocking ways.
Well, he was saying, you know, in the olden way, olden timey days.
Of the 80s.
Yeah, you'd have to, if you wanted to meet a woman, you'd have to go outside of your house and engage with somebody and say, hi, would you like to go get coffee or whatever? And that was scary because you put yourself out there. You
potentially
humiliate yourself. You're going to be rejected more than you're going to be accepted. And so for men, it's a big ego killer. Mm-hmm. But now you don't have to. I mean, the reason you do that in the 80s is because ultimately you'd like to get married and have a wife and have children and have intimacy.
I know you love that word.
Because that's the word the evangelicals use for sex. They can't talk about sex.
They have
to use the word intimacy, which is really a bad euphemism. I'm sorry. I don't like. Anyway. So.
I was going to make some terrible jokes, but I'm right. just not going to right
but
now.
But they don't have to do that anymore because they have porn. And,
yeah.
And so, and that's, that relieves the ego burden of having to go out and be rejected. Mm-hmm. And basically the need for sex is satisfied, maybe not in a optimal way, but hey, so why go through the trouble of, you know, taking a shower, getting up, putting on clothes other than pajamas and going out and trying to find a woman when all the needs that you have can really be met in the comfort of your own home without the ego busting problem? And the same thing for women too.
I mean, well, no, for women, they can't compete with the kind of woman that's on the screen, because that's not real. So they actually, you have greater and greater insecurity mm-hmm. And more push to just be too sexualized.
Mm-hmm.
And the article was great because something really essential is lost culturally when this happens. And that's the appeal and the sort of civilizing nature of a woman's
mm-hmm.
personality and character. Women tend to civilize men and have a greater impact on the whole culture when a man has to try to get her to pay attention to him. Eventually he comes, it starts, you know, sort of with sex, but eventually he comes to appreciate what she has to offer as a female person, and that has a strong cultural
debrutalizing effect.
And that's not happening anymore. That the feminine person isn't valued.
Right.
It stays at the level of sex and never goes any deeper than that when it's all bound up in the internet, which is tragic.
Yeah.
Really.
I think maybe one thing the article misses is the same thing's kind of going on with women too. I mean, there's a growing pornography problem with young women as well, and you have it with maybe more in different forms like books and things they read, rather than things they... Fifty Shades Darker, right? I mean, that's... How many women are going to go see that? That's porn.
I don't know, but it's horrifying. I mean, I haven't even been able to click on the articles to read about the movie because I can't bear it. I think it's so appalling. I mean, it's essentially abuse. It's abusive. So I do want to quibble because the end of the article... what would you call him? The Reverend Fiend?
Pastor Fiend
says, just go out and get married. Just go do it. But that's the whole point, is that people aren't.
Right.
And I don't think there needs to be some sort of governmental agency that takes over this depressing question. But there's a huge cultural problem, and I think Christians should pray.
Yeah.
And be anxious about this and... try in their own spheres to face this question and deal with it.
One way to do that might be to limit computer time for your children and force them to do things like engage with the family, like eating meals together. And they can, if they see you and me on our
computers. Podcasting together. I know that's going to make them greatly desirous of human relationships.
I can't wait to get married so I can podcast with my wife. That's what our sons will say.
Or blog.
Or blog, yeah.
Or be on Facebook.
Right.
It's going to be great.
Right.
Our children are going to be models for the new, you know, world. They're going to be out there. Actually, the idea of any of them getting married terrifies me deeply. So I don't want to think about it today. But I think it's a catastrophic.
Yeah.
And I think it has, is going to have, and probably already has, a bad effect on the church. Because if you have a lot of young people who don't know how to engage with each other and who don't understand the depth of say, a female character or a male character, you're going to have a very superficial ability to even understand theology or engage with each other. And that's going to have ramifications across the church for the way that men and women engage with each other. I mean, it's already not maybe brilliant.
If your relationships with women are pornographic, I mean, the women in your life are on a screen, then you're going to have a really screwed up understanding of what women are like and who they are. I mean, the women in pornography are always wanting you, not just wanting you, they always want sex. They always are available, all that kind of thing. And so if that's your only experience, and then you go out and try to talk to a real woman, you're going to have,
it's going to be awful, and you're not going to do it. You're not going to do it again, because the reality isn't going to match what you imagined. Right. And so you're going to have a really much more fractured, men and women already have a hard enough time talking to each other.
Right.
You don't need to make it even worse. I have no solution to this problem for this podcast.
Well, I do think it has to do with parenting, though. I mean, I think it's starting young and building appreciation for actual social engagement with your kids. I mean, having friends over, not to play games, just go do stuff. We don't do very well at this. I'm just saying. I mean, you know, when I was a kid.
when I was a kid. We didn't have the internet. We really didn't have the internet.
We really didn't, right, yeah. I went to college with a typewriter.
That just alarms and scares me.
At least at this thousand times, you went out and played all day, and you had to meet new kids in the neighborhood and fight and play and all those kinds of things you do as a kid. And this is not the experience of our children, and it's not the experience of most children that I know of.
Yeah, you're not allowed to go out and play.
We're not allowed to go out anymore.
You have to be bubble wrapped before you can go outside.
right. It's a little bit better now. We've moved in this neighborhood with the park and everything.
Yeah, but it's not. I mean, I still get really anxious about, not for their safety, but for the judgment of people around me who might get me in trouble because I let my children go outside.
Without you.
Yeah. So. Well, this was great.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining us. We're not going to solve all these problems. If you have ideas about how to get young people to maybe become Christian, is the word I'm looking for.
I didn't say that.
You should comment. And if you think that we're anti-science and evil, you could probably comment too. That would be great. So thank you so much for listening. See you next week.